So, working a football show on Sundays, I'm starting to feel like, so when the Washington Redskins decided they were going to name themselves the Washington football team, I almost feel like, what was that, like spite? Like, was that like, oh, well, we can't be racist, so you know what? We just gonna call ourselves the Washington football team because you're not gonna let us be racist. I mean, I it's like I just I'm trying to figure that out. Anybody from Washington wanna, get in my DMs, holler at me, son. I'm just saying. Hey, beef, wine, and shenanigans. Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott, and myself, Stephen Van Patten. Hello. As once described over the weekend as, come on, radio voice, by the nerve, the absolute nerve. No, I'm kidding. Big shout out to our professional artistic fraternity that all three of us are actually members of, Gamma Xi Phi. We had a big old weekend, full of not necessarily Divine Nine, but definitely some Greek shit this weekend. That I think we, the three of us, actually feel pretty good about, if not to speak for you two directly. But hell of a thing. So here we are, embarking on another show. We did not bother to bring in another guest tonight, but so here's some funny shit. We have mad people actually trying to be guests on the show, including a DJ. So we may have a sort of a
Real video
musical.
voice.
We may have a musical sort of thing happening,
Okay.
which of course might get me sued. Because no, it's like, I don't know who has rights to fucking follow me and all this house music bullshit. And but we will probably do that anyway. Anyway, big shout out to DJ Mano, who will try to get on the show at some point. Patricia Davis will probably bring in on some point. And a few other people as time marches on. But anyway, before we get too caught up in any bit of craziness, we got to talk about these last two What If episodes. Marvel, once again, home run after fucking home run. Like I it, it's kind of like, it's almost scary, the execution that is going on right now with them. And I, so full disclosure, I didn't even check to make sure everybody saw the last two episodes, but I'm imagining that my two compadres here did. And I'm literally blown away. I'm blown away because, like, it's one of those things where it's like, I should have seen it coming. The whole, we just gonna take everybody who was a main character in the other episodes, and we just gonna and we gonna basically create the flying Wilburys, basically, and we just gonna like rock the fuck out. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. Like I'm dare I say, flummoxed a little by what they did in these past two episodes. So
Gotta admit, that was I gotta take back everything I said about that because his betrayal and man, I was like, yeah, the pocket universe.
Get into it.
You put them niggas in a pocket universe.
Get into
You was like, son, this is your plan all along. You
That
the
was
ultimate Nick Fury.
That was literally like, look, here's the thing. I know you're an asshole. I know you're an asshole. Yeah. This is what we're going to do. We're going to let you go be assholes together. And for those of you that didn't watch the series, didn't watch especially the last two episodes and have no idea what the fuck Kirk and I and eventually Mark are talking about, you need to, if you have any interest in Blurred World, Nerd, whatever, any interest at all in any of this, you are doing yourself a disservice by not watching these episodes. Holy shit. And that's, and that's literally all I gotta say.
Zombies.
I know. The zombie.
What's funny is that it just felt like, the Watcher suddenly was like, he learned his lesson for why you don't keep quiet.
Right.
You see things, you see something, say something. Kind of, you know, it's
right.
It's, I just love the way he went about doing that. The dude's like, hey, there's this dude standing behind you. He's like, you. I come to tell you, you're coming with me. Mm-hmm. And it's what I've come to understand with Marvel is just when you start to question what direction they're going in,
yeah,
they make you realize, oh, that's what we wanted you to do. Yeah. We were doing that because they did that with WandaVision. Mm-hmm. You know, for the longest, we were all sitting there going, but I don't understand where this is going. And right. Then we turn that corner and it's not
Mephisto.
It's not lost. It's not, we're not going to keep stringing you along until we figure out on our own what we want to do. We already knew what we were going to do from the beginning.
Yes.
We waited until you got to the point where you got fed up. Right. And then it's like, okay, here we go. We gave them enough. We tortured them enough.
Yeah. Like we know how it's going to end. We just write the shit. Mm-hmm. We know how it's supposed to end. Mm-hmm. We're just going to write it out though.
And so who is it? Kevin Feige? You think is that the grand master behind all of this?
I would say yes.
His name's on everything.
So. I would say yes. I think Disney just says, you know, you've already proven yourself over 100 times. Mm-hmm. We're just going to give you the money and the reins, let you figure that shit out. Yeah,
I also
consistency is just like, it's staggering.
I really think it's about, and I think about this with The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. It's about who you bring in. Sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even just you just cannot only be a fan of this work. Mm-hmm. And you can't just be somebody who wrote for the company. You have to be able to immerse yourself in this world in such a way that, because none of these what if stories are stories that are familiar in the sense that I don't ever remember seeing these as titles.
Right.
These and I mean, to the layman who has only known the films.
Mm-hmm.
The Watcher in and of itself is a character that, what's the best way I can say this? Those of us who knew who the Watcher is were excited to see where this was going.
Mm-hmm.
We know the history behind a lot of these characters and these stories and things of that nature. But to the person who doesn't know the history and the background for all of this, they have really taken their time to kind of bring people into this universe and appreciate it. And yeah, you know, Disney can write you the blank in the hands of anybody else. A blank check from Disney would be a train wreck. Mm-hmm. But they picked the right people and entrusted those people to say, okay, we're giving you this project. Now you need to go out and find the people you need to make this thing work. Because, I mean, once we get back into the films, I mean, Kevin Feige's pretty much going to be just overseeing. Yeah. He has to make sure that the people that he picked, you know, I think of like, even like with Marvel Phase 1, I always think that that was the experimental phase. Mm-hmm. You think about who directed what out of that Phase 1.
Yeah.
Many of those people never came back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's not, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's because they weren't good at what they did, but it was just like, okay, we saw what you did with it, but we need somebody that can do something just a little bit more.
Russo brothers. Mm-hmm. Taika Waititi.
Yeah. I mean, think about it.
Kenneth Branagh.
He was the first one. He ain't stay. He ain't. Mm.
They gave him that one Thor movie.
Yeah.
And even Jon Favreau. I mean, he started in it. You know, right.
He started.
And basically he walked away. Right. You know, I mean,
we ain't mad because he did The Mandalorian.
I'm just saying.
Actually, you know what I think is funny? All this stuff that's going on with What If and MCU doing they do. Mm-hmm. DC fanboys still talking about the Zack Snyder cut is still the greatest cut in the world. and they happy this week because Warner Brothers finally said, okay, yeah, DC, yeah, Zack Snyder's cut was good.
So
that's all you got?
Let's get into that.
That's all you got?
DC, unfortunately, did not have the foresight. You know what I mean? Because I think ultimately, if they had the foresight, there would have been, like, first of all, to be completely honest with you, Christian Bale would probably still be Batman. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Nolan would probably still be roped in directing X, Y, and Z.
If they had the foresight, Ryan Reynolds would still be Green Lantern. Green Lantern would not have bombed.
Well, okay. All right. Look, here's the thing. Everybody's really hard on the Green Lantern movie, and maybe deservedly so. But remember, that is the first time anybody tried to do live action Green Lantern.
Right. Okay.
So my thing about that is, so for me, one of the reasons that the Batman movies get so get a chance to be as flushed out, as well thought out as they have, is because we've been fucking with Batman since the 60s. Mm-hmm. And that was the first Green Lantern attempt.
Right.
Now, and also it's like, and it just brings me back to something that I said, I think I said to Kirk before we even started, a lot of these like long-term franchises that have been around for decades, they adapt to the times, which is why in the 60s, you had boom, pat, pow, come on, old chum, let's do this. And holy Robin Williams, Batman, you know, it's like, you know, and you had all that shit going on in the 60s. And now in the 2000s, you got, you know, where is he? You know, and all that other shit. You know, and because the character gets to evolve with the times.
Right.
You know, Superman killing General Zod versus Superman going through a lengthy turmoil with General Zod that lands him at the Fortress of Solitude. You know, it's like, I feel like all of that gets sort of like modified according to what Hollywood thinks people want to see at some point. And right. I'm going to kick this cat out of the office real quick. Hang on. There you go. Get up.
Right. Bye, Coco.
Fantastic. the name's Lola. Anyway, but you understand what I'm saying? So it's like the Green Lantern thing, we're all hard on it. Just like we're all very hard on Ben Affleck's version of Daredevil.
Right.
And you know, it's a first attempt. It's a flushing out. And not to mention the fact that when they released that, let's be honest, when they released that Ben Affleck Daredevil movie, it was kind of in vogue to hate anything Ben Affleck was doing.
Okay.
Just saying, because we were all, because motherfuckers were mad because he was dating Jennifer Lopez, and but then he was, you know, it's like shit was strange back then.
Perfect shitstorm.
Yeah, you know, okay. And I'm not saying that Daredevil movie was the greatest thing ever. I do wish we had gotten to see Michael Clark Duncan take the Kingpin to the next level.
Right.
While simultaneously being really hyped at Vincent D'Onofrio's version of Kingpin in Netflix, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, as a general public, oh yeah, that Daredevil sucked. Yeah, well, man, actually, you want to be honest about it. Some of the fight choreography in that Daredevil movie
was good.
Was fucking great. And to the point, then he goes and takes on Batman in this Justice League movie. And it, actually, it's Batman versus Superman. Some of the greatest Batman fight choreography. That one scene where he's beating up these fucking dudes in a warehouse.
And killing them?
Yeah. Like, how? And yes.
How okay. Zack Snyder of you? Yes.
But, okay. No. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder is that, but, okay. Look, here's the thing. We can argue
yes.
over the whole. And you're, and ultimately, Kirk, you're right. If you're going to be truthful to the source material, then Batman should not be killing anyone. However,
Superman.
You know who fucked that up?
Who?
Tim Burton. He fucked that up before
who did he kill?
Snyder got to it.
The Joker?
The Joker and the Penguin.
Wait, how did the Joker die? Dead.
He used the batarang to wrap the cable around his foot on the gargoyle.
Yeah.
And he fell from the helicopter. And then in the
so it's kind of like an accident.
No, I would not classify that as an accident. I mean,
it's totally different. It's like when James Bond puts a grenade in somebody's shorts and then throws him out the window. That nigga, you killed him.
I mean, I don't think the point was let me put this gargoyle on his foot so he can't get away. I think the whole point was we know the edifice ain't the way it used to be. It's crumbling and cracking.
Wait, he ain't wrapped that shit around his neck, did he?
Look, here's the thing. So I think in terms of Hollywood terms,
yes,
what ended up happening is the studio was like, this is the comics. It's a 2-hour movie. We need somebody to die.
Yes.
Okay. Like,
how about that? Yeah.
And you know, I honestly, I'm like, if Hollywood execs were being respectful to the source material.
Right. Or even understood it. Or even understood it.
Right, exactly. If they were respectful and understood it, then Jack Nicholson's Joker goes to Arkham Asylum instead of falling off the side of the building. Mm. And then he's there fucking with him ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum.
You know, and then Billy Dee Williams becomes Two-Face, you know, and we progress right there.
Right.
Instead,
we get Blade.
That's a whole lot.
out the bat, Blade hits a home run. Who knew?
I have thoroughly become convinced about that the fact the problem that has arisen with DC is I really do think there's this assumption we all know these characters. So there's really no reason to get so in depth with them that Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. We grew up and laugh at it if you will, but we grew up with the Super Friends. That's all three of these characters were TV. Superman was on TV. Batman was a serial in the movies long before it became a TV show. Wonder Woman was all over television. You could say the same thing about Spider-Man. It didn't take that much of a leap to create a Spider-Man movie or anything because everybody knew who these characters were. And then I think what ends up happening where you get into the situation where you get like Green Lantern, somebody saw Green Lantern was like, oh, this is a cool character. We should put him up in a movie. But we didn't get anybody that was like, well, let me explain the source material of Green Lantern before you get into this. And it's like, no. He's part of that whole, that's why, if you think about it, we got the Justice League movie. Then we go back and tell the story of Aquaman rather than tell the story of Aquaman first, then come into the Justice League. And I've always been a firm believer that DC's television work has been the best of what they've been doing. I mean, don't get me wrong. Marvel has done an excellent job and Disney with all of the Winter Soldier and everything. Right. But
DC's been on longer.
But DC, through their animation and through their TV, have been able to flesh this stuff out slowly but surely. I think one of the biggest if I had any huge criticism of Snyder, I would have picked everyone playing those characters from the TV shows to be in the movie.
Right.
Because they already have a fan base. People are familiar with them. They know them. Not saying that the people that were in it weren't good, but we've gone through, you know, the crisis of Infinite Earths and all of the different things. So I think where DC falls flat in the movie department is that there's that proverbial race to catch up financially with Marvel. And the problem is you're never going to be able to duplicate that magic because Marvel put out, like you said, Steven, Marvel put out some of these movies sort of almost as experiments. You know, we got the Daredevil movie. And again, many of us, when you think about who went to go see those films, it's not the people who are going to see them now. It was this selective group of us who knew these characters. Because, I mean, Daredevil, I mean, that's not outside of when you think about the X-Men.
Right.
Or you know, some of the others.
Jessica Jones.
Yeah. Like you had to really know these characters. I mean, even with WandaVision, I had to go look up and find out who the devil Agatha was. Right. I was like, Agatha, who? And I had to look it up. I was like, oh, okay. But that's so left field. Mm-hmm. You know, the only people I always remember the second X-Men movie. I went with a group of friends, and at the end of that movie, when the Phoenix, when you see the Phoenix under the water, the only row that responded to it was the row I was sitting in. Everybody literally jumped up, started screaming, and everybody else in the theater is like, "Hey, what just happened?" And we're like, "Oh, you know." Of course, now we get our
non-comic book reading motherfuckers, right? No, exactly, and. You know what? Okay, so folks who are just on the bandwagon now that the characters are in movies, all of that shit aside, okay, we're not even going to get into that. because so, you know, quick flashback. Mark and I go to this one party. Well, Kirk was there too, but I think you were there. But
yeah, the bowling alley.
Yeah, yeah, the bowling alley.
Oh, right, right.
And so there's like 90 motherfuckers in Black Panther costumes.
Yeah.
At least Black Panther masks that are complaining about how they can't breathe. And meanwhile, Kirk and Mark and I actually are walking around. He's dressed as Nick Fury. I'm dressed as Doctor Strange.
I was just the Black Kolchak.
Right, basically. And first of all, people were mad at me and Mark.
Yes.
Keep it 100%.
Motherfuckers and the Moon Knight. That one dude who dressed up as Moon Knight in all white.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. So we had Moon Knight, me, Mark is Nick Fury, and like 90 Black Panthers who had never bothered to be in any
And Storm.
That's true. Well,
and an actual Storm. Yeah.
There was an actual Storm. That's true. Yep. But the point is, it's like you got these pretenders that have jumped on the bandwagon because we got movies.
Hey, man, you got to start someplace, baby.
No, but
somebody thought I was a pretender too when I started getting to like King Arthur, knowing them white kids was in the King Arthur first, and I'm running around going, "Oh my God, this is awesome!" I was like, "Man, you have no idea."
The sword has been drawn.
Mordred doesn't wear golden armor. You're
black. At that point, you're Black Patrick Stewart.
Yes. Cavill Yard.
But I don't know. I just kind of like, at the end of the day, there's cast that know shit in this cast that don't know because they haven't been rocking with this because they're not as Stan Lee himself would say, they're not really true believers.
No.
So here's the thing. Just kind of keeping it 100. So the three of us, like we get into any all whatever kind of thing and this and that, but you've got, because of the movies, we're surrounded by pretenders.
I like to consider them cadets. They just starting off.
But here's the thing with cadets. A cadet needs to know they're a cadet.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, they'll figure it out eventually when they get body checked. I figure like this. You know, we got a lot of cadets coming up, right?
Now we do.
Yeah. I'll say this. For a lot of Black cadets that we got coming out, I can't fault them because the reason why they wasn't in from the jump is because most of them were only seeing the white heroes coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, if it wasn't for my dad already being into like those kind of movies, you know, and me being kind of like not aware of shit going on, I wouldn't be into this shit. I'll be honest with you.
That's fair.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's like Lovecraft and finally getting into Lovecraft and Stephen King and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pop culture for the longest time, in terms of a large Black presence or just a presence period, was pretty much pop music.
Yeah.
And disco, and you know what I mean? Yeah. But when you saw anything other than music or athleticism, all the other things, music, athleticism, that was, they'd show Black people on TV doing it. They have them on the boxes, the whole shebang. When you come out to other things like, you know, the pop culture in terms of heroic fantasy and superheroes and horror, you ain't seen no Black people in the 70s, 80s like that.
You're absolutely right.
You know what I mean? And I can't fault them because like, all right, y'all cadets, y'all figuring that shit out. We got to just keep it going. So that the cadets can finally, because by the time we in our 90s, them cadets is going to have to take the reins, right? Because all of
there are a few already taking the reins.
Yeah, I mean, like young lady, all those black people,
Afro Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, if it wasn't, yeah, if it wasn't for
today, she's gonna be back today.
Exactly, and a lot of black folks was already in the anime and kung fu, but you ain't know that because you never see them doing that shit on the actual visual mediums.
Right.
If it wasn't for Lovecraft Country. Black folks didn't realize that there was some shit like that going on.
And let's keep it 100. So, yeah. NY Oil.
Yeah.
The most gangster-ass, socially conscious rap dudes I have ever had the privilege of having a conversation with. That motherfucker came on a few episodes a few months ago and fucking schooled all three of us on
anime.
And yeah. I'm sitting here like,
yeah,
shooty dooty dooty do. And it's like, like there's, awesome. There's all these hidden gems, mm-hmm. all these hidden gems. I mean, we're hidden gems in our own way, but like Oil, like fuck me up.
Yeah.
Because I'm like shouting him out for having just this like, you know, this like, you know, this consistently gangster ass music. And he fucking dropped like mad anime shit on us. Like, okay, yeah. I can be this dude today. And
right. Like My Hero Academia. You gotta be deep to get into My Hero Academia. Yeah.
I actually did something with the NAACP a few months ago, and we were reading essays by high school students. For scholarships, and this one kid, he's on there and he talks about, you know, how he likes anime and this, that, the other thing. Yeah. And I said to him, I said, because he in his speech, he was like, well, you know, you guys may not know some of the stuff I'm into. And I was like, are we talking Full Metal Alchemist or my, you know, and he looked at me like, I'm like, yeah, some of us do get outside of the out of that zone. I said,
out of that zone.
I mean, I'm not proficient in it, but
I got my favorites.
I remember when we were growing up, remember Battle of the Planets? Like
G-Force, you know, baby.
G-Force. I don't know. Battle of the Planets, or no, Star Blazers.
Star Blazers. Our personal. What was it? Our version of soap operas was Robotech. You know,
with Max. Right?
Yeah.
You know, you every week you were mad at something that happened on the last episode.
You'd be like this. You'd be like this. That nigga ain't gonna treat you right. Right, while they're flying their fucking mech Robotech ship planes like that.
Mm-hmm. But like, let me land a plane a little closer. Transformers and G.I. Joe.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And only now they get in a movie.
And here's a, and only now. But here's the crazy thing: it's like we were celebrating what last month? We were celebrating the 30th anniversary of the theatrical release of the Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Mm. And I remember, man, that I remember that like it was yesterday. That was a major thing. I mean, they had Leonard Nimoy, Judd Nelson, Robert Stack, and Orson Welles voice of Unicron.
As Unicron, right.
I just remember going to see that movie and saying, okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. The Quintessons are pretty much the creators of the Transformers.
Yeah.
How did y'all forget about Unicron?
Right, and he's a giant planet.
And not to mention the fact, so... Spoiler alert, which I don't really feel is necessary. I'm just saying it. Optimus Prime's death in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of fucking mail that shit generated, because of course you couldn't complain about shit online because we weren't there yet.
Right. Yeah.
But the public, the overall public response, the overall, oh shit, my child is traumatized because you killed this truck robot. Like the shit that went on, the shitstorm that went on in this country when they released that fucking movie, and like, who gives a fuck about Rodimus Prime?
We had a certain age, people of a certain age, not still doing this shit. And fuck Rodimus.
Exactly.
I just remember there were two things about that movie. I remember when I went to see it, the theater that I was in, we were divided up down the middle. Mm. One side of the theater were Decepticon fans. The other side were Autobot fans. Yep. And I will never forget when Optimus Prime died, dude on the Decepticon side stood up and applauded, and his buddy smacked him with a soda and told him, he's like, sit down and show some respect, because nobody was making a sound, and they were like, sit down.
To my point, motherfuckers were traumatized.
And then I
traumatized over that Optimus Prime shit.
I remember because, you know, it was still the 80s. You can't rewind things. When Unicron starts eating the planet,
yeah,
and Bumblebee and Spike are trying to get away, and they set off the bomb, and then he's still eating, and Spike goes, oh shit, what are we gonna, and everybody in the theater was like, wait, did he just cuss? And it was like
wow.
Yep.
And what's crazy is because of that backlash, the video, when it came out on video,
yeah,
they took that out. They edited it out. Mm-hmm. When it came out on DVD, there's actually in the menu, it says the oh shit moment. It's like they put it back in because it's like.
Yeah, because you know they recognize the fact that we're all very much of drinking age right now.
Right now. Yeah.
And it's like, all right, well, you know, all right, you might be showing this to your kids. You might just be sitting in alone in a trailer park. You know,
with like a couple of beers,
like fucking Mel Gibson in the first Lethal Weapon movie, Merry Christmas, and debating whether or not you should shoot yourself in the head.
And no, still mad about Rodimus Prime.
Still mad about Rodimus Prime. Exactly.
Let go of Rodimus Prime, man.
See, we're taking a step down memory lane. We Mark was so gracious enough to inform myself and Steven about a little thing that happened in 1977 called Dracula. Brought onto the BBC.
Yes, and, yes, he was, and I had seen it. I had already seen it, but I got to tell you, rewatching it, I do owe Mark a debt of gratitude because okay.
And fuck Mark.
Well, damn.
Introduce me to like old world pimp Louis Jourdain as a Dracula.
I do not know where that came from.
Shit.
But look, exactly, Mark. You take that fuck you as a badge of honor, because I saw the motherfucker when I was just a kid. Mm. They put the shit on PBS. It was on PBS. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The BBC had put it together, as the BBC tends to do. Right. So, okay. From my standpoint, especially now that I rewatched the shit just last night, okay, as much as I love Hammer, as much as I love Frank Langella's version of Dracula in 1979, as much as I love Francis Ford Coppola, this fucking version holds water big time. And I'm gonna come out and say that this thing was actually like, if this Louis Jourdain version had Francis Ford Coppola's budget,
yes.
Forget the fact that because this precedes Francis Ford Coppola, and then you look at Francis Ford Coppola's version, you're like, oh, I see what you did, motherfucker. And no disrespect to Francis Ford Coppola, but I mean, come on. There are so many.
That's where they got the script from. Mm-hmm.
Basically. Well, I mean, ultimately, it's those two movies are the closest to the book.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is a few years back, I had posted something on Facebook because I said I had just finished reading Dracula. And I said, I'm trying to wrap my head around this love story because there's nothing in Stoker's book.
Arguments with people about this shit because there's no love story in that book.
Mina Harker falling in love with him.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Stoker was a evil, drunk motherfucker. He ain't put no love story in that goddamn book.
He really didn't. No.
So I threw it out there. I said, does anybody know if there has ever been a Dracula movie or anything that has stuck close to the source? And a friend of mine wrote me, he said, Louis Jordan, BBC Dracula. Wow. And I was still renting discs from Netflix. So I put it in my queue and I got it. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, because especially the scene when Mina and Lucy are on the hill.
Yes.
And they're talking to the old, because they never that part of the story, that's in her diary. Where they talk about that. Because I kept trying to figure out where this story came, like where that particular origin story came from.
Right.
And I realized that, you know, he was using Mina to get to them.
Yes.
I always thought that spoke volumes because that just showed that as evil as he was, he feared men.
Yeah.
He was like, yo, these cats are not playing. I got to figure out a way to catch up, figure out what they're going to do before they do it. Because this playing.
Watching, real quick, Mark, now that you said that, it all made sense. Because I kept watching it. I was like, you know, this is the Bram Stoker's, like we had that talk about, you know, in white America, it's fear the black dick. And Bram Stoker had like fear the foreign dick. Because as much as it was the BBC, there were a couple of scenes that were like, wow, the way they got her laying on the bed in one of the scenes. When Lucy got bit and the way she was laying on the bed, like she was ravaged. She wasn't ravaged. She's, you know, we were looking at like, oh, she's got her neck bit. Nah, the way they, and how she was mourning on the tomb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, the rated R version, you see it in Francis Ford Coppola.
Coppola, yeah.
But and I gotta say, I do appreciate what you guys are saying in terms of, you know, this is for a BBC production. I said it to Steve. This is a good example of shooting for stage, right? Because you know you got to prepare yourself. It's soundstage interiors and on location exteriors. They didn't do a bad job. It was actually for the time. I would admit for the time. This is some premium acting. This is some thespian shit.
Yeah.
That they brought to genre fiction. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the 70s, they're British, and you know, right. There's no
and they don't have the budget like that.
There's no
and they got fucking, the budget like that.
You know,
yeah.
Underwear models.
Bruh, I just thought about, you know, and I'm watching this too, and all right. So I watched this and I was telling Steve that this reminded me of The Legend of King Arthur on BBC. And it was the same kind of thing. It was a stage, you know, that it's soundstage interiors. And it was the story of La Mort d'Arthur version of The Legend of King Arthur. I'll say this. There was no blood at all in any of that in Legend King Arthur. All the stabbings, all the dudes were dueling and fighting, their swords being swung, axes and the whole shebang. There's no blood. Mm-hmm. In this here, you know, you got stuck with a stake. That blood just spit out on the BBC, on PBS. Mean, she got blood coming down her mouth. That shit, I gotta admit, there's like y'all went really far on this. Y'all, you know,
and y'all really was
looking to stay to the horror of it.
Is the thing, Kirk? Think about it.
Yeah,
it's 1970 something.
Yeah,
you ain't 1970. You don't have the Francis Ford Coppola version yet. Like the closest thing to gangster full on vampire shit is whatever Hammer Studios is putting out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Blackula and Scream, Blackula Scream.
Yep.
Those are your barometers back then.
Yep. And they were pretty bloodless too, actually, now that I think about it. Not the Hammer. Yeah, relatively.
Some of the Hammer shit is actually pretty fucked up.
But I'm saying the BBC thing is on par with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just by
yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah. But it's also because at that point we don't have all that other shit, it's actually more impactful.
Yeah.
For those folks who actually sit there and say, "Oh, let me see this French motherfucker can actually play Dracula," and you're like, "Oh fuck!"
Like a cold pimp.
But no, To your point, it's like Hollywood went ahead and created the romance thing with him and Mina. Actually, if you think about it, the one big hole in the Francis Ford Coppola thing, outside of Keanu not necessarily being able to maintain his British accent, but I love Keanu Reeves. Don't get it twisted. I love Keanu Reeves, but yeah, you're gonna go out and be somewhere and be British. You do have to maintain the accent. I'm not.
Yes.
And Kevin Costner fucked the same. It worse. Kevin Costner is way worse than Robin Hood. But But all that neither here nor there. Okay. So here you have Mina in the Francis Ford Coppola version. And she's, you know, hearing this whole big confession from homeboy, as of course played by Gary Oldman. And he's like, "Hear me. I am the breathing monster men would kill." And he goes into this whole thing and whatever. And then she does the roundabout and she's like, "Yo, you killed my fucking friend."
Yeah.
"You killed Lucy." And she's like beating the shit out of him and the whole thing. And then she's like, "But I love you. I don't know a whole lot of women that would rock with that. I do not know, especially sisters."
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
Especially sisters.
No.
"You killed my best friend on some old..." And it's got to come back to her at that point.
"Steve,
why is y'all getting freaky on top of the tombstone?"
Yeah.
"And I now walked up." Steve. And y'all, it's like...
it's that foreign dick. Bram Stoker had problems.
Oh no. You're right. But see, you're absolutely right, Kirk. But to my point, that's why in the original text, there's no love story.
There's no love story. He was a manipulator.
He literally, Dracula in the original book has no, and I'm sorry if this offends anybody, but he had no love for these hoes.
He didn't.
Well, his own wives called him out for that.
Yes,
they were like, "You don't, you
especially
don't,
in this one. You never in the BBC.
You never
loved." And in the first Ford Coppola version.
But see, what Coppola did.
If you're gonna love somebody, I mean, you know, Monica Bellucci.
But
anyway, sorry.
I think digress. The Coppola version to answer that question was to put in that story that she looked like the woman who committed suicide and jumped out the window and the whole thing. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's so all cute.
All right, because almost, but you know what? That's almost the same thing that happened with Blackula.
Right.
You know, the sister looked like his wife. Right. And he was like, you know.
No, they've been playing that angle because at the end of the day, and they even did the Christopher Lee version, because here's the thing. There is almost, without a love story, there is no reason for any woman to watch this movie.
Right. Right. Yeah, right. No, no, no.
Right.
If you think about it, yeah, because it's kind of like it's you know what it, because I was gonna say maybe it's because they wanted to make Dracula they wanted to give him kind of like the Frankenstein, you know, the sympathetic monster moniker, right? Because you know it's not Frankenstein's fault that nigga trying to figure shit out, and people keep fucking with him, and they trying to do this with Dracula, trying to make him like the sympathetic monster. When in actuality, he was the toxic, manipulative man, beast that he was.
Yes,
there was no redeeming of him.
Also,
and I'm wondering if that also plays in with the Interview with a Vampire, because it came out during that time that the book Interview with a Vampire was out, right? And the whole idea of the vampire being sexually attractive and beautiful, but
this romanticism and everything.
Right.
But I think that has been, and to that point, that's why Frank Langella said that he had it in his contract that Dracula, his version of Dracula, is to never show any fangs and he's never to have any blood around his mouth, because he was this attractive. Like, well, he didn't do it because at the time he was playing Dracula on Broadway and was getting rave reviews. So the whole idea was, I'm supposed to come on and I am the essence of sex. I am the thing that women want and desire.
Right.
When in actuality, you're damn thief and you're a murderer.
And you smell bad because you're dead.
And let's keep it 100. He's the first Gothic gentrifier. He came into your hood, bought up property you didn't want. He gonna move in.
Shit.
Think about it. He bought Carfax Abbey. Nobody wanted Carfax Abbey.
Right.
He was like,
If you want to go deeper, it's the other way around. If you're going deeper, because during the Victorian era, anybody who wasn't Anglo was considered lesser than.
Mm-hmm.
True. And because Dracula's coming from the Slavic nations of Transylvania, they ain't shit anyway. So he was doing a Jefferson. He was trying to move on up.
But you know what's interesting?
And they were scared of the foreign dick.
And we're moving on up. Carfax Abbey.
And I guess I would have to ask. I would have to ask. Stoker's great great grandson, because there is one thing that I was always curious about, and that was Quincy. Quincy was always an anomaly to me, because I was like, first of all the places in America,
I got a theory about that, but I'm gonna let you
Texas.
I'm gonna let you finish. I have a theory.
How did you get to England? Yeah. It's like
Texas.
I got a theory on that.
Brooklyn, yes. Jersey,
right. Massachusetts, yes,
Boston. I could get that
right. No, right. No.
Texas.
I got a theory. I got a theory. Bram Stoker was out drinking one night, and just like any of the three of us in the heyday of the crack epidemic, would be in a nightclub, and then here come this crack dealer nigga, and he's like flossed and he's throwing money around, and right. he's making people feel however, you know, you end up feeling. I think the Bram Stoker version of that, he's out in the pub and everybody's river dancing and having a good time. And blah, blah, river blah, dancing. And here come this Texan motherfucker. Hey, everybody, how you doing? And actually. and just like, because I can speak to this a little bit, because like when I was younger, I would fall for these women with these exotic accents, right?
Right.
You know, you'd be somewhere and like, and yeah, it was like a British accent or a Jamaican accent or, right. you know,
yeah.
you know, somebody calling me Poppy Chulo and all this other, and I'm just like wrapped around their little finger for at least like 48 hours. And
river dancing.
They were river dancing, right. And I think Bram, like, and let's keep it 100. We work out our anger shit when we're writing our shit. Mm-hmm. I think Bram ran into a Texan somewhere.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. What happens to the Texan at the end of the book? The Texan is dead.
Dead.
The Texan is dead. And for all the randomness, that's literally like
right.
either of the three of us
yeah.
write some story and we just randomly throw in a dude from Pakistan.
You're throwing a Viking.
End of the story. Oh, for you, it's a Viking. Okay.
And kill that Viking.
End of the story. The Pakistani, the Viking, I don't know, whoever's pissing Mark off. Kirk. That motherfucker ends up dead. Well, whatever. Y'all need to work that out. But that person ends up dead at the end of the story.
Yes.
A Texan somewhere yep. in Bram Stoker's shit. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, that's not entirely as much as you were like, yeah, it should probably be an East Coast motherfucker. It's like, no, right. there are plenty of Texans who got money in the 1800s because they're
from the oil.
Mm-hmm. It's like meet somebody from Oklahoma, and one of them just happens to be like, well, let me go see what they're doing in fucking England and blah blah. Mm-hmm. And so that person, you know, takes a boat because, you know, not like there was Delta Airlines or anything. So that person takes a boat, gets over there, and it just offends a whole bunch of motherfuckers and then comes back to Texas. Bram Stoker kills that motherfucker in his vampire novel.
Or I got...
That's my thought.
I like that one. I like that one. What you got?
Well, I think Steven's got something there, but I think what happened was they were in the pub. Everybody was river dancing. This dude got up and did the two-step, simplified everything, and everybody started doing that and pissed Bram off because that was the easier dance for him to learn how to do. And, you know, so Bram is off doing the two-step.
Because that shit was their electric slide, right?
The Stoker step, you know? It's like...
the Stoker step.
He could have been on a he could have met the dude, but actually, you know, he could have met him on a boat. He could have been, I don't know if Bram ever got to America, but it could have been that he was leaving one of our ports and got on a boat and met the dude coming across the Atlantic
and thought he was obnoxious as fuck.
It's like, I'm gonna put his
obnoxious as fuck.
And then you kill that motherfucker in your book.
Man, played poker funny. With him, lost his money, and was like, I'm gonna kill him in my book.
Kill that motherfucker in the book. That's right. Let's keep it real.
I'll buy that.
Let's keep it real. So,
oh my God.
For those of you out there that have not partaken in this particular version of Dracula and are inclined to watch a vampire movie, I think all three of us will endorse that you go ahead and do so.
Yeah.
Because it's actually really good. Mm-hmm. Really, really good. Hey, that's our show. Holy shit. We gotta go. Thank you, fellas.
Thank you, man.
As always. So next week, we should probably do Squid Game or some shit like that because everybody's fucking bugging me about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We are the fuck out of here. And peace out, Greasy.
And buy our books.
Oh, yeah, there's that.